Lord.
Oh, it's still on echo. It's another edition of Radio Misterioso. And this week, as promised by email through many people, I have a guest in studio, Pam Stonebrook, the Intergalactic Diva. But let's first hear one of her works before we get on with her. Pam Stonebrook, Intergalactic Diva, and who has known biblically many aliens. We'll talk about that very soon. If you want to give us a call during the show, 323-661-5455. That's 661-KILL.
Bye.
Oh, tempted to have that sultry DJ voice that comes in after something like that. Pam, that was beautiful.
Thank you so much.
It was alien. Did you write that? You did, didn't you?
I did write that. Words and music, lyrics and music.
And we were, I hadn't heard before the harmonies on scat. That's wonderful.
Yeah, I don't know that, I can't remember hearing anyone else harmonize scat things. And you know, it's funny because when I did that song, I mean, it wasn't normally like that. I had done the lead vocal and I had to go back in about a week later to put another background part on. And I had listened to the scat things, for about a week, and I just said, you know, let's just roll that scat thing at the end. Let me see if there's anything I need to clean up because I was doing some final vocal stuff. And I said, let me just add a couple harmonies on some scat things, because I kind of know it by heart now. And he said, really? You can do that? And I said, well, let's find out. So, yeah, I thought it turned out pretty good.
Stuff like that you let flow in the studio, it seems, or any kind of work, you just let
higher self takes
exactly.
over.
Okay, yeah, that's much better than what I was going to say.
But, yeah, that was really fun to do. And that's Ralph Rickard on trumpet. I could not get enough of his trumpet, so I had him put, like, trumpet, flugelhorn, you know, muted trumpet. I mean, I just tracked it like crazy, because he was just so brilliant on that song that I just said, I'm using all these tracks, thank you.
That track was called Alien, and it's from her CD Experiencer, which we will give you the ordering information on as we go through the program. What happened was, how I met Pam was, I do a magazine called Excluded Middle. We have a really heavy interest in contactees, at least originally from the 1950s, people from the 1950s that said UFOs had contacted them and the beings thereby had contacted them. And Pam is continuing that tradition in a much more stylish way, and the music is much better. If you've ever heard any of the music from the 1950s contactees, I should have brought some in, but I thought it would kind of embarrass you.
We have to get sophisticated in the 21st century, yeah. You know what I'm saying?
We're doing that right now. I guess we can kind of start U-type interview format and say that Pam has written a book about her experiences, and why don't you describe some of that in the way that you usually do on a radio show? You have been on Art Bell, too, so I'm getting sloppy seconds here.
But you're grateful for them, aren't you?
Always, yeah.
Well,
I can't sit still.
Well, basically, I had my first, what I call my first conscious contact, and that's when I became aware of the fact that something very unusual was happening to me that I could not deny. In 1994... and I'm not going to belabor it because a lot of people are already familiar with the story, but basically I woke up aboard what I perceived to be a spacecraft and found that I was there physically, and or at least to my perception, I was there physically. And I was literally introduced to my four hybrid gray daughters, and I was pretty freaked out about the whole thing. And I guess it was about a year and a half after that that I finally was able to find some help for these experiences, because I had had flashbacks and memories coming back to me. And it was a pretty hard time, because basically your reality is shattered and you step into a new paradigm completely. And so I really wrestled with that for about a year and a half. And finally got some help, went to a channeling session, and met the head of MUFON LA, Mutual UFO Network Los Angeles, who had a support group for abductees, contactees, experiencers. I prefer to call us experiencers rather than abductees. Abductees sort of connotes
powerlessness,
victim mentality. So I started to get help at that point, and became pretty savvy in dealing with these beings, realizing that I'm not going to die, that I had just been exposed to something more than most people had. And of course I began to research the phenomenon, and found that the database on experiencers is just vast and rich and amazing. So I began to research the subject, ended up having some contact with the reptilian beings as well. And I realized that after having gone public, how privileged I was to be in a position to have maybe opened up so many other people to share their accounts with me who had never shared them with anyone else. And I found myself in a very unique position of having these accounts in a database that I was setting up. And there was so much information that I felt compelled to share it. And so I decided to write a book about my experiences and include many interviews with other experiencers as well, because I realized there was no definitive work in the abduction field on the reptilian species, because it's kind of like ufology's dirty little secret. I've found throughout the course of my research that the accounts of reptilian contact had been suppressed by many of the abduction researchers, because it was just beyond the pale. It was just a little too much for them to handle. They were looking for acceptance and credibility, and they were not about to introduce something that whose actual form had been devised throughout Christianity, through Christianity, and to add the sexual component, which the reptilians are it's a sexual encounter, not just a medical procedure like as with the Greys, mm-hmm. but it is actual sexual encounter. And of course, the more I researched these experiences, the more I became aware of the fact, convinced of the fact, that these experiences have been going on throughout our human history. We've just been calling them different names. You know, back at the in the 16th century, there was incubus and succubus. Mm-hmm. But we since we had no context for these experiences in our scientific worldview, we basically relegated these experiences to the realm of myth. And I believe that the elves, the fairies, the little people, all of these accounts, these anecdotal myths that we have always thought of as myths, were most likely interdimensional contact of some kind that just simply was not explainable in the scientific terms of the day. And I think we're in a very unique point in history, because we're now able to make sense of this scientifically, and we'll go into hyperdimensional physics and stuff like that.
All right. I was going to ask, this is a question that comes up in my mind, and probably a lot of other people's, is that if somebody else was in the room and saw what was going on, I guess this happens in your home, actually most of the time, mm-hmm. which is another question we can go into, but if somebody else was sitting in the room and one of these experiences had started, or if there was a camera in there or something, what do you think would be the quote-unquote this plane, earth plane, our perception, objective reality of the experience?
All right. Well, this is what I am trying to do with my delving into this mystery. The one thing I have learned is that I can't box any of this stuff up. There's almost like no one answer to any question. You know, it's almost as if we have no science or vocabulary to really look at this phenomenon. So I have a tendency to use the E, all of the above, you know. So I would guess that you see a myriad of things. I have not really had a steady relationship since these started, so there hasn't been anyone in my apartment for most of that 6 years. I mean, for almost all of it.
You know, most of the time the other person doesn't see anything anyway.
Well, the thing, that's
unless
either,
they've been targeted or they're open to it or whatever.
Or they may be shut off too. That has happened, mm-hmm. where they are shut off to the point where they don't even know that person may be gone.
Right.
Or it could be happening on an astral level as well. This is another, these are all different levels of reality that I believe these experiences happen in. In fact, the encounters that I describe in my book are the ones where I feel they are absolutely physical. But they do happen on the astral levels, because I've been able to do my consciously controlled out-of-body exploration to target these beings in those realms. So we enter those realms, they enter this realm as easily, probably easier than we enter the water, which is another dimensional reality, really. So we're just, we've really just got to open our box up wide to consider the myriad of possibilities and the malleability of what we call reality, which isn't solid at all.
Or the malleability of our ability perceptions.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I, you know, it's like the ant walking on top of an onion, or walking around an onion. It's like they keep walking around the outside, figuring that that's all there is. Not knowing that there's this juicy, you know, stuff inside. And it will, and I love the ants, and the ant analogy, because it's like we're like ants beside a 6-lane highway. They're just busily going about our business with our anthill, and we don't notice there's a 6-lane highway next to us. And I think that's kind of where we're at with, in terms of our perception. We have this egocentric view that we are, ethnocentric view that we're the top of the food chain. And we just have to learn to take our place in the cosmic scheme of things, or else.
Or else. We're already finding out or else. Have you met any other ants who are looking at the highway in the same way that you are?
Well, actually, I don't know anyone who has delved into the paranormal arts as I have, in terms of doing the out-of-body exploration to initiate contact with these beings. I think that's what makes my work different, is that I am really studying the altered states of awareness, because I believe these so-called abduction experiences are involuntary shamanic encounters that are beckoning us to wake up to a bigger version of ourselves, a higher version of ourselves. And so I think that's what's going on. And I don't know many people who are doing more than just talking about their experiences. See, my feeling is that it's not enough for me to share my experiences, because they're just anecdotal accounts. They're not something that you can ever experience. And that's what this life is all about, is experience. So unless I can give you your own high-dimensional experience of your infinite self that is animating this body that's separate from this body, you're not going to get this stuff. So one of the things that excites me about my work is that I teach people controlled out-of-body exploration, so that they can go and see their future selves, their past selves, when, as we again, no time to exist, because I think all our lives are simultaneous. And I believe that these beings are soul groups that we belong to. And if I can offer you the tools to have your own experience of this these hyperdimensional realities, then that's my job. That's what I really want to do. My stories are my stories until I can give you some tools to have your own journeys.
Well, some people might not want a hyperdimensional reality where reptilian aliens come.
Well, maybe. You'd be surprised how many do, though. I got news for you. I get a lot of letters from women saying, I wish I could have a relationship like this. Oh, yeah. It's insane.
What kind of relationship is that?
Well, because...
If we can be specific here.
Well, it is sexual, but it's more than that. It's a real... communion, in terms
to borrow
of,
a phrase,
yeah,
to coin a phrase.
Coin a phrase. Thank you, Whitley. But it's a real connection that is so much on a spiritual level for me, anyway. The communication that these beings make with you is it is so powerfully romantic and yet spiritually connecting that. For women, it's not really about a person, the way a person looks. For men, I realize they're visually stimulated. But for women, if you can make that emotional and mental connection with us, you know, and be really present with us in terms of being respectful and sensitive, then you've got us pretty much. And so it's that emotional connection, I think, that women have resonated with, because I sensed it so powerfully that for me it was a very sacred, very interaction with these beings.
See, I was about to ask, how do you know the experience comes from outside you? Because that would be a very basic question that any, like a scientist or something like that. Carla Turner, actually, I said when I interviewed her at one point, I used to talk to her. Yes, we talked quite a bit after the interview too. She was a great source of information. She actually died of cancer about 4 or 5 years ago, which you know. But I asked her once, I said, well, how can you, quote unquote, prove to somebody that this stuff is going on? And she looked at me and she says, I'm not out to prove anything.
Exactly.
I've got my experiences. If you want to accept them, that's fine.
Right.
If you want to talk to me about them, that's fine. If you're not interested, you don't believe me, I don't really care.
Right.
And I sort of get
you
that.
Have to be that
I sort
way.
Of get that from you too.
Well, you have to be that way if you're going to come out with stuff like this.
Mm-hmm.
You have to detach from all opinion, or otherwise you're going to go. You're going to be flipped out and paranoid the whole time, you know. And that's not living to me.
Uh-huh.
And but I'm going to tell my truth, whether people like it or not. And I know that if you detach from all opinion, and that's good or bad, then your ego is out of the way and you are free. If your ego's out of the way, you're free. And the only reason we worry about other people's opinion is because we're afraid of our ego being hurt. Well, I don't care about my ego because I know how much more I am than a body and an ego. And my focus is I'm operating from a much different level than, you know, most people mm-hmm. on this planet. And I like it. I like it
yeah.
that way.
It's like somebody who's doing research and it's so far removed from what most people talk about that you have to take that road.
Right.
You have to take that road there before you can start a dialogue or start to get anything, you know, whatever you're going to get out of the conversation, the experience, or even being taught like you want to do with people to experience astral travel. And
yeah, I want to give this as a gift for anyone who really wants to understand who they are, because I believe it's the cutting edge 21st century tool for exploring consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's everyone's impressed with remote viewing.
Yeah,
and it's,
I was going to bring it up, do this comparison.
Because it's a psychic tool that you can use to really tap into that unlimited matrix of consciousness that is there for us. Well, the deal with the out-of-body experience is that you are literally physically experiencing it. Whereas with remote viewing, that you've got kind of like this cloudy black and white picture in your mind. Albert Taylor, who's also one of my out-of-body giants that I love,
mm-hmm.
he also remote views, and he uses this analogy. He said he says remote viewing is like watching a football game on a black and white TV, and out of body experiences are like being the quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
So that will give you an idea.
Yeah, some of the remote viewers I talk to, it sounds like they're having an astral experience occasionally because they get incredible color and detail. It's like they're there.
Sure,
but it's also. The only stuff they talk about actually publicly is the work with
scientific
yeah. work and this, you know, going to the Russian sub base or whatever, and it's very real to them, but that's still in this reality, in this dimension. That's what that's what they were hired. I guess they were in the army, but that's where they were used for.
Right.
And there's a certain point at which that's not very interesting anymore.
Well, not only that, but it's very dense. It's so physical. You know, it kind of like, and doesn't have to limit you, but it comes from a militaristic male point of view. I mean, even the protocols themselves, the actual experience of it mm-hmm. is so male.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's so military, and instead of, now there is a woman, Prudence Calabrese, who come up with her own techniques for teaching remote viewing that are much more
sensitively
oriented.
Yeah, she used to work with
Courtney Brown,
but I think she broke off from him.
Yeah, she broke off from him and really came up with her own protocols. And brilliant lady. I met her at one of the conferences. But and I understand that it's scary to drop your ego, because the shamans call ayahuasca the little death. Because basically that's what you're doing. You're altering your state of consciousness completely. Your mm-hmm. spirit is leaving your body. And it is frightening if you don't know what you're doing and where you're going.
Or how to let it. Go.
And that's why, and have the trust to let go.
Yeah.
And just trust that everything's gonna be fine and you can handle whatever might show up in front of your face. Cause there's some dark blobs out there, you know?
Yeah.
But that's what I teach people. I do a total initiation on them in terms of leaves of their system before I teach them the techniques that I know to get out of your body. But for me, this is where you become your own shaman. This is where you can graduate from believing anything to finally knowing for yourself what mm-hmm. is true and what isn't. Now, are these realities real? Well, what is real? Everything that you experience and perceive is real
mm-hmm.
for you.
Yeah, exactly. And I guess it depends on how you interpret it, use it, and interact with other people with these experiences as to how they're real, okay, but how valuable they are. Maybe value
Absolutely.
Is more is the word we're looking for mm-hmm. beside instead of reality.
Sure.
And I totally spaced on what I was going to ask you about next. Oh, I saw David Morehouse speak once, and he said in his remote viewing, you got a big smile on your face. We can talk about David Morehouse a little bit.
No, let's not.
Okay, but he said that he went through a process over a week when he was training people where they would be, he said, we totally break down everything that's going on with you, and then we build you back up. And I raised my hand, and I said, have you ever had any problems with people being broken down and then freaking out? He says, no, we're very careful about that. We have professionals there. And I said, what kind of professionals? He kind of brushed it off. And I was thinking, I don't know if I want to go near this because it doesn't sound like they exactly know what they're doing.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and the thing is, all I do really is remind you that whatever your fears are, you will meet them on the other side, the lower in the astral realms.
Now I remember what I was saying.
If you're afraid of, if you believe in Satan, guess what? You're gonna manifest Satan over there.
Uh-huh.
And that's why it's really important for you to get in touch with your belief systems and figure out what it is you really do believe. And whether...
Or you'll find out.
And it's a beautiful, sort of clearing process to actually go out there and see something and say, you know what, I don't need that on my cerebral hard drive at all. Let mm-hmm. me erase that.
Yeah.
You know? And so you kind of like tend to just drop all the crap
right.
quickly because
right.
you don't want to encounter it again.
Uh-huh.
So I think it's a really, it's a stunning tool for people who are fearless.
I was talking with Mark Pesci once. He's an internet kind of god. He works down at USC. He has a group called the Church of the Motherfucker.
I love that.
And their sacred sacrament, he says it's secret. I won't tell you what it is, but from listening to him, you can tell it's salvia divinorum and or DMT, but I think it's salvia. At one point, I said, I was talking to him. We were at a party, and I said, you know, one time I was in the midst of a psychedelic experience, and it was the worst thing in my life, and I couldn't, you know, everything was horrible, and I thought people were looking at me. I thought there were satellites looking at me from space, all this other stuff. And I turned to him, I said, you know, at one point I just said, you know what, if I don't come back and I'm not me anymore, or whatever that was me. And right when I said that, I said, so what? And we said it at the same time and did a high five.
I love it. Well, you know, I believe...
It's this letting go, you know.
It absolutely is. And, you know, I think one of the best things I've ever done for myself is psychedelics when I was in college and high school and college, because it opened my mind to really search for the truth. It wasn't just, getting about partying and getting high. It really stirred something inside me.
No, that ends really quick if you want to keep
yeah.
up with this study or experience,
exactly.
whatever you want to call it.
But it was really an opening for me. It was a sacred introduction to my multidimensional self, and I didn't even realize it. And, you know, it led to spontaneous out-of-body.
It kind of sneaks you in the back door. It really does.
Yep. And, but I just, I really think that, now I don't want to do drugs now because I know that my clarity is what I want to take out into those dimensional realms. I feel that the out-of-body experience is even beyond what the shamans are doing, because the shamans are still using substances to get to those altered states. Now, I can't consciously direct, I can't consciously do out-of-body every single time, but I would rather be aware 50% of the time and be completely sober and ready to control the experience than to do it 100% of the time and be out of control of it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's my trade-off, is to not do drugs, but to do it, you know, to do it with my consciousness and not with a substance.
Right.
So
I wanted to ask a little more specifically, because I'm sure people are interested in this as well, about your actual experiences, and if they're still going on, what it's like now, how these beings appear to you, what kinds there are, all these things.
Okay, well, I
feel like Long John Nebel now. For me,
I have, over the last about year and a half, since I have been targeting these beings myself in my out-of-body state, I targeted my four daughters, I targeted the reptilian a couple times. Now I'm letting the experiences be without trying to analyze in the morning. It's like I almost don't even remember much except the snippets of information. It's like I don't have to have those. I don't have to have absolute recall of these experiences, because I know now that I know they're going on. I know I'm going to live through it. I don't need to spend my days hashing through what might have happened last night and trying to remember it and trying to get to a regressionist. I want to live this life now.
Mm-hmm.
And if I need answers to anything, I will find it out because I am my own shaman. I'll use my out-of-body technique to go to that entity and straighten it out, whatever I have to do.
So you look at the whatever experiences went in the past as kind of a gateway to what you're doing
Absolutely.
Now.
Absolutely, yeah. This is the most important thing that I'm doing now. If something happens and I want to explore it a little further, I'll do it with my out-of-body stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to sit there, you know, and try to find a regressionist and try to figure out what it means. I will do it myself now. And that's what I want to do with other experiencers, those who are ready to be empowered to really take the reins for their own personal growth themselves, because it's just time for us to be our own shamans, our own gods. We're becoming gods. Let's become gods. So that's where I'm at kind of with it now. I know that things go on. I sense reptilian presence. Certain nights I will sense it before I even go to sleep, and I just let it be what it is and don't even try to, you know, be aware of it.
Right.
Or if I sense the presence, I may target it instead.
Uh-huh.
Instead of just letting it happen, I'll do an out-of-body and target it so that I'm making the choice of just how and when it's happening.
Right.
So
how since you've started talking about this and coming out with your experiences, how do people react? Like, more importantly, your friends and or any family you have. Did you lose friends? I'm sure you gained a lot of friends.
Well, actually, I really kind of crawled into my cave because my friends had a real hard time with this, and they tell me now that the reason they didn't want to hear about it was because they knew me to be a very honest person, so they had to take me seriously, and they were so frightened that what I was saying was true,
mm-hmm.
that they didn't want to hear about it. My mother was actually very hip, because this is rough stuff for your mother in Ohio. She was I mean, you know, because the Globe and all the tabloids did articles about me. And, of course, she loves the tabloids, so she saw a couple of the articles.
Look, it's my little Pam in the paper.
But she was very cool, because she took a lot of hits from our relatives, and she says, you know what, Pamela's her own person. I've never been able to tell her what to do. I don't think I'm going to start now. You know? So she was very cool. She took me to psychic fairs when I was younger, so she was very open. We went to Edgar Cayce's Institute of Research and Enlightenment when I was in my teens. My brother had cerebral palsy, and I had warts all over my hands, and she took us there and cured us both with his medical library, had us look up, you know, our particular illnesses. And so she was a visionary in her own, you know. I mean, she's older now, and
she
suffered
a stroke. Well,
she even
take you there. I mean, that she's open to that.
I picked wisely. I picked a very wise mother. So she's been absolutely fantastic, very supportive of me, and in terms of men, I haven't been dating a lot because guys have a real tough time wrapping their heads around this, and you know, at first some at first may be titillated by the idea, and then they realize after they see the database and the scope of the research I've done that this stuff's really going on,
mm-hmm.
and they can't quite handle it.
Right.
And they also feel the competition, because I have said how great the sex is with reptilians, but there is no competition. There's reptilians, and then there's human men. I would love to find a man.
Wouldn't trade one for the
this,
other.
You know? Yeah, exactly. So, but it's going to take a Dalai Lama in a three-piece suit to get this stuff.
Would you like to pick another song that you'd like us to play off of
Experiencer? Well, since we're talking about aliens, let's do Heart of the Gray Matter.
All right.
That's the first cut. This song actually was one of the first songs I wrote after I had kind of come out of my cave. I hadn't written music for quite some time. And basically it talks about how it feels when you know an experience is about to happen, you're still awake and you're pacing, you know it's about to happen, and if you go to sleep, you know it's going to. And so it's about the pickup anxiety, it's called,
mm-hmm.
that you feel before a contact experience. And it's kind of like a triple entendre, because it's Heart of the Gray Matter. Let's get to the Heart of the Gray Matter means let's understand our intellect, let's understand how to integrate our love with our intellect and how to love these beings because they are only a reflection of us. So, and to understand the phenomenon from those terms, from our heart. And so that's what this is about.
Okay, we'll talk a little more on that angle when we come back. This is Heart of the Gray Matter by Pam Stonebrook, the Intergalactic Diva, my guest today on Radio Misterioso. Easy Living by Billie Holiday and Pam Stonebrook.
That was so spontaneous and cool. We were sitting here saying, boy, that's a long intro. Those old records have such long intros, and I start singing along, and Greg puts the mic on. I love those spontaneous moments.
Well, that's why we can do whatever we want on this station. That's because we can do what we want. We can say anything we want, and indeed
that's
we have
awesome.
Been. Today we are talking with the intergalactic diva Pam Stonebrook. And while during the break in the music here, she wanted me to mention that I had to introduce her as the female Whitley Strieber, who's just about to break out.
Well, you know, someone told me that, and they thought that was kind of the case because Whitley really broke the Grays into mainstream, and no one's had the balls to do it for the reptilians because they know that the invective is just monumental when you do this, when you approach this sort of thing and put it out there for public consumption by the masses. But But yeah, so it could be, you know, just the next stage of revelation in terms of what's the next pieces. I mean, there's so many in the assessment, which is this top secret paper that Robert O'Dean
saw.
Bob
Dean, yeah.
Yeah, he said that the government knows about 17 different extraterrestrial types. And this was back in the 60s.
Mm-hmm.
So can you only imagine how, you know.
I always had a problem with Bob Dean, not as a person, because I love him as a person. It's just that he says these things like Phil Corso, who's passed on. At least that part of his story.
Right. Well, you know, the thing is, this is what I've realized. I mean, so many people say that, you know, people get into the UFO field because and make stuff up because they want to be somebody. I got news for you. The UFO field, to belong to the UFO field is like no big prize here. I mean, you know,
I was going to ask you a little bit about that.
It's like this, you know, if people think I'm in the UFO field because I didn't have a life, I got news for you. This is like about as silly as it gets sometimes. I mean, I love the conferences and I love the researchers, and the people that go to the conferences are great too, but the field of ufology, there's so many vicious, backbiting people in this field. This is not high-minded stuff for me. I mean, I can go to an after-hours party in South Central and meet more spiritual people than some of the people in the UFO field.
Uh-huh.
And there's no money at these conferences. There's no money in selling your books about these subjects. So if people think we're here to make money, they are sadly mistaken, because it ruins your life to even tell anyone that you're having these experiences.
Yeah, just ask Bob Dean.
Yeah,
I was
going to
ask you, have you actually recount, if you would, the you said that you were going to get, you were up for some sort of a job, and then they, like they do these days, they look you up on the internet.
Well, see, I'm a celebrity personal assistant. I've assisted for Stephen Collins, for Zsa Zsa Gabor, and a host of other, you know, big name celebrities. So when you're up for a job interview with one of these celebs, and I won't say who it was with. I think I've told you, but we won't say it over the air. But the agency will look you up now on the internet to make sure that you're not an actress. They don't want you to steal that celebrity's Rolodex.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, you can put anything on the internet about anyone, whether it's true or a lie. I mean, I don't mind defending my truth, but I can't defend other people's lies about and misinterpretations of mm-hmm. what I am saying.
Well, I think they were maybe skittish about the whole subject.
Yeah,
they're
skittish about the whole subject. I've had a really hard time in the straight world because, I mean, I ended up working as an executive assistant because they ended up not looking me up on the internet because of that. You know, because I wasn't working for celebrities. I was just working for like a head of one of the film companies. And I also, the last job that I just left, it was a entertainment company that does websites and trailers for major motion pictures. I was working for the CEO.
Mm-hmm.
But, and they didn't look me up. So they had no idea.
Yeah.
But little by little, people in the company, there'll be somebody that will look, put your name in just to see what happens.
Yeah.
And so a couple people knew about my experiences before I left there a month ago.
Uh-huh.
And you know, it's all, and you feel like, you almost feel like you're a communist back in the 50s. You know, you're going to be outed. You
yeah.
know, it's like or you were gay in the 40s and no one, God forbid anyone should know.
Uh-huh.
I mean, it's kind of like the new prejudice, you know.
Yeah. One of them.
It's the new, yeah. It's the new thing that's really taboo, and so you just do it. You put your head down and you go, whatever.
Yeah.
You know.
If anybody wants to talk with Pam here on the air, and you're a rich person and have two phone lines, and you're not listening to us on one, the only one you have, try 323-661-5455. Unfortunately, our email is not working. The computer crashed. It's our lot in life here at Kill Radio, with no money. Also during the musical break in there, Pam was saying that she wanted to mention that she had initiated an experiment with some physicists.
Up in San Francisco. Yes, and actually, I'm just going to mention my website because I'd like to send people there.
Oh, yeah, plug.
It's experiencer.com, and that's the word experience with an R at the end.
No E-R?
Experiencer.com. And on there you'll find how to, you know, if you want to buy a CD, if you'd like to order my out-of-body workshop tapes. I also give a one-on-one intensive. I think that flyer's up there. And Just some more, some information about me. My email address is there, so you can contact me if you've had experiences. I am keeping a database on experiencers. That's all we can do is jot the data down and start to compare and corroborate some of the information. But yeah, one of the things about doing out-of-body work and the extraterrestrial mystery as well, or the interdimensional, hyperdimensional, whatever these beings are, people that are in this field of inquiry, and especially the out-of-body stuff, for some reason you become extremely fascinated with physics. So I've been going to some physics conferences. I actually went to the Caltech Physics Conference about 7 months ago, maybe, something mm-hmm. like that. But I ended up going to, I talked to my friend Bob Dobbs. He's the original character that Church of the Subgenius was
Well, I think he took
congregated.
It on.
Yeah,
but
or
whatever.
Something like that. But anyway, he's one of the Bob.
He is a fascinating
He
character.
Is a Bob Dobbs, yes. Yeah. And he's a good pal of mine, and I was telling him about my idea for my next book, which is Astral Physics. My plan is to teach four or five astral physicists to get out of their bodies and to come back and explain to me with their contextual knowledge of hyperdimensional physics what they might be experiencing. Mm-hmm. So to attempt to explain it scientifically what they have experienced.
In a language more people who need to know it can understand.
Exactly. And the merging of science and spirit is the subtitle of the book. So I've got two physicists lined up to do this that I'm going to teach. And I'm working on Michio Kaku now.
Mm-hmm.
But basically, I had told Bob Dobbs that I wanted to meet some physicists. So he said, well, I've got a good friend up in San Francisco, really fantastic guy, Jack Sarfati, was involved with Esalen up there and with Joe Firmage's group, ISSO.
He's been involved in that for quite a while, actually.
And did you know that his grandmother was Mussolini's mistress?
No.
Is that an awesome story? Yeah.
He's involved, actually, I think, way back in the 60s and 70s with Einhorn Psychic Mafia Group, which also included Andre Puharik and Jacques Vallée, of all
Oh, that
people.
Reminds me. We have to read the review in Freudian Times of The Excluded Middle.
If you like.
Yeah, we will do that.
But go ahead.
We promise.
All right.
So
the echelon words, which
and
we promised.
Oh, yeah.
Incredible. Whoa. Somebody's calling. Just a second.
I love it.
Who was that? That was the girl that comes in on the show after ours. The one that yelled killed the president that was recounted in the LA Weekly article. Anyway, go ahead about Sarfati.
Oh, so.
Before I rudely interrupted you.
No, that's okay. So I got in touch with Jack. I sent him an email, and he wrote me back, and he says, well, who are you? So I sent him a couple websites where some of my rants and raves are posted. And he said, you sound really interesting. He said, why don't you come up to San Francisco? He said, we're going to have a party for a birthday party for one of our physicists up here. And there'll be 35 physicists at this party. I said, fabulous. I would love to come up. So it was 10 days. I was planning to go up in about 10 days when we had this conversation, and I decided, knowing that these guys are such hardheads and they need so much physical proof of this stuff, this kind of stuff, that I told him, I sent him an email and said, Jack, I'm going to do an out-of-body, consciously controlled out-of-body experiment tonight, and I'm going to target the party, where it's going to be, and I'm going to describe it to you tomorrow morning, if I can target it, that's what I'm going to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, and I'll send you an email tomorrow morning and let you know what I saw and try to describe it to you. And the point will be to prove to you that consciousness is non-local and that we can access the future. And, of course, I know this, but most physicists are trying to quantify this consciousness matrix. So that's the big deal with physics now. So he said, well, we don't even know where the party's going to be yet. It was his email back to me. And I wrote back and I said, it doesn't matter. And so he was kind of intrigued. So that night I
didn't... Knowing Sarfati, I think he wouldn't have any problem with this. I think he was just teasing you.
No, he was loving it.
Yeah.
He was loving it. And,
no, I mean, he probably knew your answer beforehand, but he's trying to go.
Well, no, I think he didn't remember.
Not your answer, but what you were going to do with it. Because I think he's open to that kind of stuff.
Oh,
he's been
open
dealing
to
with it,
forever. But you know, you forget. You forget things like that. Like,
yeah, yeah.
I forget that we can do these things, mm-hmm. you know. So what I did was I did the out-of-body that night. and woke up, and when I did the out of body, I was sailing. I was flying somewhere. All of a sudden, I'm facing this huge building, and I hear, I'm of course seeing, like, you know, 360 degrees around me. So I've got like, fountains behind me, just dripping water, not on, but just dripping water everywhere. And then there were about 12 cement steps, and up the steps were four huge doors that kept moving from clear to green. They kept like, and so I entitled the email "Behind the Green Doors," and I sent the email, described the place, sent the email, and I said the doors were green, but they're not green. I don't know what that means, but I'm putting it down in the email. Mm-hmm. So I get there 10 days later. And he picks me up from the airport. We have an hour to go back to his house and for me to get all prettied up. And so I change my clothes and put my lips on. And so we're getting in the van. And we're waiting for another woman, Cheryl, who's fabulous, to come and join us. So she finally shows up. And we get in his van heading to the party. And Jack says, "Wait a minute, I don't even know where this party is." And Cheryl said, "Well, I just got the email today. I have it with me." She said, "So it's in my purse, so let's go."
It was like a rave. You don't know till a few hours before.
It was like a rave. So there we were heading out, and she says, "Yeah, it's at the Science Museum, Space and Science Museum." And I went, "That might be it." I'm thinking to myself,
yeah, yeah.
"You know, that might be it." I didn't say anything.
Mm-hmm.
So we drive up. There are fountains everywhere as we pull into the parking lot, dripping water.
Yes.
12 cement steps, or around that amount of cement steps, up to four huge doors. Now, the doors are clear, but right next to them at a 45-degree angle, the same exact size as the doors, are these green glass panels, so that when you're in front of one door, you're looking to the left or right, and you're seeing the green come
mm-hmm,
through.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why they were green but not green. Is that the glass is reflecting through the
right,
doors.
Right.
So I stopped Jack at that point because I knew I had targeted it 10 mm-hmm. days prior.
Uh-huh.
And I said, "Jack, I said, remember that email I sent you behind the green doors with the fountains and the steps and the four doors that were green and not green?" He turned white as a sheet. He was blown away. He went, "Oh my God." He said, "You got to come in. I got to introduce you to everyone."
Uh-huh.
So I was like the queen of the ball that night. And that night when we came back to his apartment, he sent out these emails to everyone telling them that I had targeted something that I didn't even know about, that hadn't even been, like, laid down. And basically proving the consciousness is non-local. So we've been really, really good friends. And it was actually one of the coolest things I had done because it established a bit of credibility for me with the physicists and hopefully allowing me to pull some in for my next book, Astral Physics. So,
uh-huh.
So yeah, it was great. I mean, all these physicists from all over the country wanted to fly me to their labs and put electrodes on my head, you know. And I told them, "No, that's not really what I'm interested in. I'm interested in teaching you how to do this." And they said, "Well, we're scientists. We are credentialed scientists." And I just basically sent them back an email saying, "Sorry, but consciousness trumps credentials." I was just being a big brat.
This actually started a slight argument between us because I said, "Well, that's basically remote viewing," but you said, "No,
no,
it's not remote viewing.
It's not.
It's full Technicolor, 100% experiential."
Absolutely. Well, and Jack keeps calling it remote viewing too. Remote viewed this, and I go, "No, no, no, Jack, let me teach you." No, but
there's
a difference.
Yeah, you know that this conference that. We're both planning to attend in San Diego, the Society for Scientific Exploration.
We'll
probably have far more people there that are far more open to what you're talking about here than Sarfati had at the conference he went to. And I think you can make a lot of good connections and
me
interactions
too.
There.
Very excited. Well, physicists they get my work more so than the general public.
Yeah.
And certainly more so than the fundamentalist Christians.
Well, fundamentalist anybody.
Yes.
Including fundamentalist scientists.
Yeah.
There's this undercurrent of kind of unease and paranoia running through a lot of the things that we talk about and we do in my magazine and your work, and that actually kind of pulled you into being vaguely sort of interested in what's called the conspiracy arena or the parapolitical arena. And that's why when I sent out the email, I said we'd read off all these echelon words.
Oh, yeah, yes.
Just to keep from just to prove that the paranoia is what you make it. You know, we might as well read these off. Tim Beckley, who you know of, I think. He's a publisher in New York. He publishes UFO books left and right. Mr. UFO, Tim Beckley. He sent out an email in response to this, this list saying, well, that everybody puts these things in their emails, you know? And I was thinking, you know, I didn't send out a response to him, but I was thinking, well, not everybody puts all of these in their emails. And the other thing is, if you do think that, I think you underestimate the paranoia and maybe even the boredom of a lot of people that are assigned to monitor us and monitor email and phone traffic. And you can say that this is a paranoid fantasy, but it's actually been in the news. 60 Minutes, I think, was interested in doing something on it. The European Parliament actually is getting complaints from people and trying to keep the... I don't think the NSA is actually running it, although they're a beneficiary of the Echelon satellite and surveillance network, which is worldwide now, I believe, at least... It's very heavily in the United States and Europe, developed countries that have computers and good information and communication systems. The European community is a little bit more savvy to it, and there are enough people complaining, and there are enough people listening that they're making a stink about being watched when they don't want to be.
Interesting.
And this list of words, I think I have one too. Maybe we can trade off. Actually, here's let's read them off first. I've got my own list here.
All right. Do you want to take turns? Take
yeah,
turns.
Read as many as you want.
Okay. Are you?
And then maybe we can talk about it.
Which is your first page?
oh, let's see. I think it went
this
way.
It was kind of more boring than the... Oh, okay.
Well, don't read the boring ones.
I know. That's what
How
I
about
saying.
Reading the real hot button ones? I mean, yeah. V and dog probably aren't...
Right.
Those aren't on there, but you know what I mean.
Right.
Like encryption.
Like
I mean.
M15, FBI,
loud and clear.
Hackers.
Yeah.
Encryption, Secret Service, White House, Halo, which is a type of parachute jump. That's bizarre.
Haven't heard that one before.
Me
it must
either.
It might have something to do with a parachute jump where it's designed to be done at night or in some way that they're not noticed.
This is a cool one. Steak knife, code name of double agent in the IRA. That's cool. To know.
Yeah.
That's something we all should know.
Exxon Shell. I guess they're looking at all the people in the oil companies too, right?
Blow pipe. You blow girl. Blow pipe.
That's a surface to air missile. All the drugs.
Cocaine.
Heroin.
Yeah, how many times they tap me on that one.
And another drug, Kosovo. At least it's a drug to some people in the military.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
No. I mean, just I'm being symbolic here. I'm being.
Oh, Jiang Zemin. We were both at the Jiang Zemin rally.
Yes.
We found out.
Yeah, there were a lot of the Tibetan community was there heavily, which is why I went out there because of the Tibetan Buddhist. But they did their best to get the people in and out of there very quickly in buses. But Pam has to tell what she did. She's got the kind of activism that I like.
Well, I'm an activist from way back. I've got lots of activist blood running through my veins.
There's another word for Echelon.
Activist.
Activist. I waited until, because everyone was like set up across the street from the hotel, and I waited till I saw the first limos pulling out, and I knew that everyone would be coming out of the meeting,
yeah.
You know, and like coming out onto the street, out into the area to be picked up.
Mm-hmm.
So at that point... of course, I wore my breasts. I mean, I, like, exposed them beautifully.
Yeah.
Not totally, but, you know, I had them in visible sight. They were there for all to enjoy. They're my optional equipment. And so I walked right through this sea of suits, and I would make eye contact with, like, you know, Rupert Murdoch and...
David Geffen.
David Geffen, right. And
although
I'd
I don't
say,
know if you think he'd be interested in your breasts.
Yeah, this is true. Also, although they like to look at them still. They
yeah.
want to, they want them.
Yeah,
way.
Well, of course.
But I would say things like, you should be so ashamed of yourself. What have you done to your grandchildren? And I was like, you know, and the looks on their faces, it was just priceless because no one gets through to these people.
Mm-hmm.
And so they were looking at me like, oh, isn't she a pretty girl? Maybe I can, you know.
Yeah.
And I would hit them with these, and their face would just, I mean, they would crumble. and it was so great to see these
wealthy. I told
Pam
next time I should send her with a mini camera hidden in her hair.
I know. I'm good.
Or actually, I'm good at this stuff, baby.
I was at Kent State in 1970. I'm good at this stuff.
Hide it in your cleavage, and then you'll get the straight-on look from them.
Straight-on look. I know. As though it were an interview. Propaganda, virus, anarchy, Chelsea, plutonium, anthrax, of course, Waco, World Trade Center, PLO, SEAL Team, GRU, Russian Army Intelligence.
Haven't heard of that one. That's a new one. Actually, I think Echelon's run out of the National Reconnaissance Office, which is, let's see, everybody knew about the CIA, and now everybody knows about the NSA, so now things are moving into the National Reconnaissance Office.
DIA, DOD.
Yeah,
I'm throwing those in.
Yeah.
Mole, Blackbird, which is a high-speed U.S. spy plane.
Yeah, SR-71.
Lock picking? Are they kidding me? How about nose picking?
Brain picking.
Porno.
What's that doing on there?
Porno.
Boy, they must be really busy down there at the NRO intercepting every time somebody says porno on the internet or in a telephone conversation or email or whatever.
Firewalls.
Yeah, firewall is a...
Computer
security, right.
And I thought all this time that it was... Wasn't that a song by that Prince wrote for... What's her name? I don't know.
No, that's Sugar Wall.
Right.
What was her name? That little Irish or Scottish...
She was so cute, Scottish girl.
I can't remember her name. I'm so embarrassed.
Smallpox. Mania.
Mania?
She's a mania. Black Ops.
Electron? What the hell is that doing on there?
I know. Pipe bomb. Clone. How many times have I talked about cloning? Myself.
That must mean they have who are those people? The Raelians under surveillance.
They're great. Boy, you gotta hand it to them. They're out there. I love it. Explosion. Serbian smuggle. Airframe. Revolution.
Revolution! There's a loud for you down there at the NRO.
Spetsnaz, Russian equivalent of SAS.
I should know what that is, and I don't
know. I don't know either. Privacy, espionage, hackers, wipeout, flashbangs, which are stun grenades.
Yeah, I thought railgun is...
Show me your flashbang.
Anytime.
And so those are
some railguns on there. The down here. It's actually the scientist that was working on the Australian scientist whose name I can't remember was too bad Ken Thomas isn't here, or Rob Sterling, was actually murdered because he decided to sell it to the highest bidder.
Sell what?
A railgun, which was a gun that could shoot something from the Earth into space.
Oh, fabulous.
It had like a mile-long barrel, and it would just shoot projectiles. And a Glock 26, that's on there too, a ceramic handgun, which is undetectable at airports. I did not know they made ceramic handguns.
I did not know.
That Glock made those.
I know. Is that a real gun in your pocket? Are you just glad?
Or is it a ceramic gun?
Industrial intelligence. Oh, we could. Let's not go down the chemtrail road. That's too... That'll keep us too busy.
Yeah, too many. Especially in Los Angeles.
But that's fun. Those words are good to know. I'm sure I've got a few more. I'm sure if you talk about abduction or... Men in Black.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, my phone is always clicked into when I bring up any of this stuff like that. When Achari and I speak on the phone, we get bumped in all the time, you know, because of course we're outrageous. I mean, who wouldn't want to listen to our conversations?
I would.
Yeah, it's like we should sell those. Now that I think of it,
phone pranks on the NSA.
Well, when we start, I mean, I don't know if I should say this. No, I shouldn't say this because we come under enough attack. But we do get very outrageous on the phone. We start saying some very suggestive things.
If they're going to be listening, at least let's let them have some fun.
Well, yeah, I want them to have fun so they don't bump me off. You know, I want them to want to continue to cover me, you know, and to survey me. So I've got to keep them entertained.
I had lunch with Paul Krasner, if you know who that is, thanks to Rob Sterling. He was a publisher of The Realist for a long time. Left-wing... I don't even know if it's left-wing, but it's ostensibly left-wing newspaper in the 1960s, and then he started up again in the late 80s. He he went through a period of extreme paranoia about certain things. He goes, I knew when I was, the worst time I was paranoid ever was when I had this great joint and I was in Golden Gate Park and I saw the cops make a U-turn down the block and I hid it in a tree and ran away. He said it was the best pot I had and I didn't have any money and I just threw it away like that. And I realized, and I said, yeah, I kind of went through the same period too when I'd been contacted by somebody who I think specifically was put there just to make me paranoid. But he said, and why did you stop? You know, what made you stop? And I said, I got tired of it. He goes, it gets really old, doesn't it?
Yes,
you get tired of feeling afraid of things. So that's why, I mean, this is a very weak thing to do, but just coming on and reading this stupid list, I mean, you know, what the hell's going to happen?
Yeah, exactly. Well, you know, the thing is, it is hard to know.
We might get a call at 323-651-5455.
Well, you know, it is really hard for most people
661.
To get this information and be informed on this level, because you can't, it does tend to make you paranoid when you see what's really happening.
Mm-hmm.
But the bottom line is you've got to be spiritually savvy enough to not get paranoid, because you lose your power.
Yeah.
To not be angry, because again you lose your power. You're not going to be functional and in any way able to make a move.
Yeah.
To change anything if
yeah.
you're scared or pissed off.
Right.
So if you're afraid or pissed off,
yeah.
you lost the war. They
yeah.
won.
If you're scared, you're paralyzed. And if you're pissed off, you're just annoying to everybody
exactly.
else.
Exactly. Well, and you can't be your most powerful to do anything about any of it. So,
right.
So that's my take on that. And it is hard to know this stuff. And there are times when I get really ticked off. I mean, I had two men in black show up at a gig of mine. I had a black van following me around about a month after my second Art Bell interview.
Mm-hmm.
And I had what I think might have been two military interrogations, and I was freaked out. And but I couldn't get angry. I just couldn't allow myself to go there. You know, I'm still alive and I'm fine. And
what kind of interrogations?
Well, you know what? I put a little bit about it in my book, because I don't like to get into it.
Uh-huh.
But let me just say, they were incidents that I could not explain, where things happened to me that made me realize that something had gone on,
mm-hmm.
that someone had injected me with something. And I was roughed up a bit, and I could not explain it, because as far as I knew, I hadn't left my room.
Yeah, it's something in Southern California that Melinda Leslie is still dealing with.
Yeah,
we've
talked at length about it. She may be the only one that knows about my experiences to that extent, but she was great to talk to about it. Because I don't like to go into it, because I'm not paranoid.
Right.
And I'm not going there. Luckily, with my out-of-body stuff, I'm not afraid to die. You know, I really am not. It's like, whenever that time comes, fine with me. Because I know what else there is. I know the other parties that I'm guest listed for. Beyond the veil. So, yeah. But you can get paranoid, but don't let yourself, because then you're worthless.
Right.
To the cause.
Mm-hmm.
And
why do you think there's all this marketing of paranoia now, especially with this new game called Majestic, I think, which is an online computer game that's designed to actually turn your life into a paranoid...
Really?
A paranoid fantasy, yeah. I don't know if people get off on it. So that
people would call you and threaten
you on the phone and all this
well,
other stuff.
Well, there's
by
a
email.
Titillation. You know, we're so overstimulated.
Well, you know what? It's like a haunted house.
It is.
It's the same
it
thing.
Is.
A horror movie, a haunted house. And I don't know how many people are prepared to actually have it in their lives.
I'm a total thrill seeker. I mean, that's why the out-of-body stuff is great for me, because it's like, it's scary stuff. It's like being on the ultimate roller coaster, you know. And either you're a sensationalist or you're not, I guess. But, I mean, there's a payoff to being paranoid, I guess, to some extent. If you think that maybe people will feel sorry for you, maybe... sickly you think that that's love in some way. It's like, you know, you misinterpret that it's love, and it's not. It's just pity. That's
yeah.
all it is. Being a victim is not where it's at.
This sounds like some of the love advice I've been getting from Pam. She's giving me free relationship advice, which
yeah.
is wonderful.
We all need
anybody have a
counseling
question
on social
anybody
skills?
Need a little bit of counseling, they can also call 323 661-5455.
That's right.
Pam will give you some relationship and or any other kind of counseling on the air right now, basically for free.
Well, you know, we have, you know, social Tourette's, you know, we really do. We don't know how to be in our lives and how to react to other people lovingly, unconditionally, and allowingly. And that's the bottom line. We've got to get our act together and manage our energy, because we're creating every moment with every thought we have. We have 60,000 a day, most of which we're unconscious of. And that's the beauty about the out-of-body experience, too, because you realize immediately that you are creating your reality, because out in those realms, any thought you have, any focused thought and intention manifests immediately. And I believe this physical reality that we're in is a training ground for the power that we possess, because there's a lag time between our thoughts and the manifestation of that thought. Mm-hmm. So we don't really put them together as, oh, that's what caused it. It was my thought process.
Right.
Well, I got news for you. Our thoughts are creating this reality. This collective reality is created by our thoughts all.
It's what we're taught and how we think.
Yeah, and it's not going to take many to change, shift the paradigm to move us up to a higher version of ourselves. Mm-hmm. But we all have the responsibility to think a higher thought at every moment of our lives.
Right.
You know? And should we talk about the fact that I don't think disclosure is a very good idea?
Yes, go right ahead with that. My tape's about to end, so we'll talk about that and sort of end it for the tape, so we have a nice tape. But we'll wait until Lisa gets in and keep going.
All right.
So you go right ahead here's our closing thought for the tape that I'm making right now is, don't release the files.
Do
go ahead.
Do not disclose information on these topics, on the topic of the extraterrestrial presence, because you know what? Jack Nicholson was right. We can't handle the truth. I mean, here we are, Pearl Harbor's opened, and the Japanese-American people are getting threats because of Pearl Harbor.
What? Really?
Now, does this sound like a sane species that we belong to? Let me ask you that.
It just keeps getting proved that we're not.
We are such rednecks. We're the rednecks of the universe. And until we get our act together, no, we're not ready for this information. We are simply not ready. So the government freaks are right. Absolutely. I'm totally with them on this. Sorry, Stephen Greer. You're wrong. I really don't think we're ready for it. We're such a vicious species. And so all I can do is hope that we elevate our consciousness in time to keep from self-destructing, because we're really hitting the wall in terms of our environment and our survival as a species on this planet.
And we continue to go to sleep here, so maybe once in a while we'll get a little alarm clock call from people like Pam.
Wake up down there!
Yes, wake up down there.
Excluded middle.
Okay, well...
Let's read a couple lines from that.
We have time. But you want to read it after I play this one song from Uri Geller?
Let's play a Uri Geller song.
You didn't know that Uri Geller put out an album in the 1970s. It's now out on Fork Bender Records.
Fork Bender? Oh my God, this is too good to be true.
I think he wrote...
A queen without a king.
Would you like me to play that? Is
this about West L.A.?
West Hollywood, you mean?
The conference that I went to up in Seattle, the transgender conference, was right next to
us. Oh, yeah, yeah.
FTM, female to male. It was awesome. Incredible conference. I really made some amazing friends up there. And I'm really, really fortunate to have met some of the people that were at that conference. And, yeah, whichever one you want to play.
Okay. We were talking about consciousness opening.
These
and stuff,
are Uri Geller's songs. Come on, love. Velvet Space.
I was going to play Come on, Love, but you pick one.
Well, you know what? Is it a CD or a tape?
It's a CD.
Let's play little snippets like they do at record companies. A&R, you know, verse and chorus, and we'll do a little critique.
Okay, this is some of Come On Love. See, the Queen Without a King is just the choir, so it's probably just his words and not him actually. This is him actually
this is great.
Talking here. Or, no, he doesn't sing. Listen.
Hear the voice, the soft enchanted voice. It turns the forest green. It makes the flowers dream. The sons are out to play. All tears have been wiped away. The children are here to say, come on and love.
Oh my God. Greg, you have made my day. I have never had such an epiphany in my entire life as listening to Yuri Geller.
Are you having a kitsch epiphany? A camp epiphany?
Too fabulous.
This song of love.
This song of love. We will pump you up.
Listen, they're saying, they're doing his words, the chorus.
Oh, this is priceless. You could make a fortune on this CD if you put it on eBay.
I found it in New York. I don't know if it's actually on Amazon or anything.
This is a collector's item.
This is
wouldn't it be funny if Yuri Geller's CD
being together, seeing together, raise up your eyes.
I'm going to focus if I ever get on Oprah.
Don't be afraid of.
Oprah, my story is fabulous, but you have
come
not heard Yuri Geller's CD
on
Fork Bendo Records.
Yeah, originally came out on vinyl, of course.
Fork Bendo.
What's that say?
No, it's just his records.
Oh, records, yeah, okay.
I Cannot Answer You is pretty good. Which one is that?
Cannot Answer You. 2, 7. We're going to play another piece.
Okay.
Yuri Geller.
7. It's this is
this
I cannot
is a very
answer
young
you.
Picture of him too, isn't
yeah.
it?
Oh, this one's great. This is the hit off the album, I think.
I cannot answer you really to nothing. Maybe only to a tiny drop of tear that has fallen off the eye of a molecule. Yes, it is that little. For the whole truth and nothing but the truth is so big that the second drop of tear will make you crazy.
This is so awesome. Make you crazy. Oh, this is priceless. Priceless. That second drop of tear, what was that?
It is that small. Off
it's
of
that
the,
small.
Off
of the second drop
off of
tear.
Off of the eye of
but
a molecule.
You must know and be sure that this one little drop is far, far enough for your understanding in life and be a guide to your children's children and so on, that they might one faraway day receive the second drop.
So on.
Receive the second drop. Receive the second drop.
Oh, this is
James Randi put out a record album? I don't think so. The only one he's put out is the phone tape, which I have played on my show.
So all over that.
Well, I'll have you in again, and I'll play the James Randi Picking Up Young Boys tape.
Oh, we have to.
I did that
we
with Rob.
To.
We ended up calling him James Horsecock Randi because he said he was 11 inches to this one.
I doubt it.
Yeah, that would mean he would be this tall, and he'd be sticking out.
For
he's
your
a short
understanding
guy.
In life,
and
to your children's children.
That's why he likes the
and
boys.
So on, that they might one faraway day receive.
He does not sue for libel in these
you
things because it's the old thing of make him deny it. He has never said anything to anybody that's brought it up. I was scared about publishing Rob's article called The Amazingly Randi Randi.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because he'd have to go into court and talk about it, and he doesn't want to do that.
That's true. That's interesting. You're so on. You're so hip, Greg. Isn't Greg fabulous?
Well, do you
we were destined to meet. We've been like circling each other at events. We just found out we were both at Roswell.
Yeah, I took a picture of Jack Boulware from San Francisco interviewing her. He was doing a piece for Salon day by day, and I said, "Well, this is an interesting character, and she's very pretty. So let's take a picture of her." And I just brought it and showed Pam.
Yeah, it's awesome. Wait, and where else were we that we didn't know? Oh, the Zhang Zemin thing.
Yeah, and the Laughlin Conference,
the
but
Laughlin
we didn't talk
conference.
Very much. See, now we see how incestuous this all is.
This has been so fabulous.
Usually I play the Carpenter's version of this, which is the original, but I do that all the time.
Of what song?
Calling Occupants of Interplanetary
Craft.
Oh,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
Have you heard that one?
I have a long time ago, but I'm thrilled that you have such hip stuff.
Karen.
I'm trying to find the Carpenters stuff before they became, she started singing. They were like a jazz band.
Do you want to hear something? I might be able to help you with that.
Really?
You know why? Because Sherwin Bash, who used to be their manager, managed me for a time.
Oh.
He manages Anita Baker.
Uh-huh.
His daughter actually used to date Richard. So I bet you they've got the stuff.
Really? The other thing is, at some point I wanted to talk to Richard Carpenter, because the words to Calling Occupants of Interplanetary Craft are from a meditation that Al Bender wrote out for members of the International Flying Saucers Bureau in 1956, I think it was.
Let's get David in here.
Yeah.
Do an interview. Richard in
yeah.
here. Let's get Richard in here.
That'd be great.
Wouldn't that be awesome?
If he'd come.
He would. I'd
Unfortunately,
call
I think I'd only want to talk to him about stuff. But,
well, we'll ask him.
Yeah. That'd be great. Because the words are directly out of this meditation that Al Bender sent out. He was the head of the International Flying Saucers Bureau. And he's the one that wrote, it was ghostwritten by Gray Barker, but Ghost wrote Flying Saucers and the Three Men, which was the first Men in Black book.
How awesome.
But he wrote this meditation for everybody all over the world that were members of the International Flying Saucers Bureau. I think a few thousand people. He told them the time and their local time. They would sit down and meditate and say these words to themselves,
gosh,
to try and get the space people to contact them.
That is so awesome.
And somehow Richard Carpenter got
in.
A hold
he's yeah, in.
He got a hold of this, and they did this song Calling Occupants of Interplanetary Craft. However, this is Babes in Toyland doing this version, which is a band I really like, but they broke up. Let's hear some or all of this one.
Okay.
Is there nothing
fabulous
in there? Okay, it's in
fabulous
this CD player. Here we go. Calling Occupants of Interplanetary Craft, covered by Babes in Toyland. That's not it.
Oops.
Where is it?
Oh, it's because it's 10, that's why.
Uh-oh. Gotta learn to count if you want a radio show.
In your mind, you have capacities, you know, to telepath messages through the vast unknown. Please close your eyes and concentrate with every thought you think upon the recitation we're about to sing. Calling occupants of interplanetary craft. Calling occupants of interplanetary most extraordinary craft.
Yeah, Karen's a much better singer than this.
Calling occupants of interplanetary craft.
Young voice, everyone lies.
Yeah.
You have to be fabulous.
Calling occupants of interplanetary craft. Calling occupants.
This was actually the line that had to be repeated. Calling occupants of interplanetary craft. Just that.
And we'd like to make a contact with you.
Everyone wants to make contact.
We are your friends.
You know.
Calling occupants of interplanetary craft.
It's on.
It ain't gonna happen.
No, they're not
going to find them in their own at their own party.
Yeah, they're not going to land on the White House lawn. I'm sorry to say.
No.